Me, I'm 11 years old, and I'm an idiot. And I'm just saying, Mom, Mom, if this plane crashes and burns, I'll never talk to you again. And this woman threw up all over the back of the seat. And it was beautiful.
The best part was the Tiffany's line. Chris from Brooklyn, you're on my list.
Oh, thank you, dear. Have a good one.
You too.
Tiffany's, the precursor to disaster. So I assume it didn't crash in a soccer field and kill 200 people.
No, that was a Cuba airline.
Okay. But still, a fire in the hold, that's pretty serious.
PGW in Montclair says, I have a hairline horror story every day. Get it? Hairline?
Oh,
Instead of airline?
Because he or she is balding?
Yes.
All right.
Oh, my God.
It's getting dark in
How
here.
How much longer? FMU, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Daniel again. I hung up early. I'm very sorry about that.
That's okay.
Common misunderstanding.
Right. But anyway, so like I was saying, this is about, I want to say 2 years ago. Me and my family were going to Hawaii. And we're standing online, you know, we're about to get, you know, a check. You know, when you go on the plane, you got to get checked and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we're going through, and my brother, who's like 3 years older than me, he, they say, go through the, did you know how nowadays they have like that,
scanner
radiation machine,
yeah,
with the X-ray,
mm-hmm,
and walk in. So he goes in, and you know he goes through, and then my younger brother goes in, and he's like, "I'm not doing this." He said, "I don't want to do this. I'm not going through the radiation machine. You know, I don't." So,
oh my God, really, dude?
I mean, really?
No, you just cursed again.
What do you mean?
I'm gonna have to hang up on you. Limit here.
Like I was saying.
The bad language is not allowed.
Yeah, what the hell?
By our conspiracy
like,
masters.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What a doofus. FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, Frankie. Hi, Andy. How are you guys?
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, so I'm flying out to Tucson, Arizona, and the pilot gets on and says, "Remain calm, don't be alarmed," and I'm thinking Kevin Bacon from Animal House during the parade. And one of the flight crew comes back with a stewardess who looks as worried as possible. They yank up the carpeting in the middle of the plane, and they want to see if the landing gear is going to work, and it's right by my seat. Next to me is this very large Italian woman. She starts making the sign of the cross and mumbling in Italian and Latin. She just starts doing every prayer known to man. We wind up in Colorado instead of Arizona because they said they were getting a bad reading on the landing gear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was it. That's my horror story.
Oh, that's scary.
All right. Have a nice weekend.
Okay, have a good one, Bob.
Bye.
I've been thinking about it.
Let's talk about how awesome next week's show is going
to
be.
Well, I want to give my airline horror story.
Oh, okay.
It was a flight from Moscow to Berlin on Transero, and there were some Russian girls behind me who were doing their nails. Oh, man, I hated that.
You should not be allowed to do your nails on an airplane.
Or a bus, or a subway, or any place outside
your
house.
Someone tried to do that on an airplane once, and the stewardess asked her to stop.
Oh, see, I didn't know how to ask... How to stop in Russian.
Well, it really bothers me.
I couldn't think of the mime gesture either for don't do your nails on the airplane. Njet, njet. I suppose I could have done that.
Or just smacked her.
Yeah.
That would have been better.
There's a lot of puke on airplanes. I've only encountered that once ever. My daughter once puked on an airplane. But I can't think of any other time I've seen that or witnessed it apart from that one occasion. Maybe it's happening all the time and I just don't notice or smell it.
I've puked... Riding in a cab with my head out the window.
Really? I think I remember that.
How would you remember that? I was in college.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm thinking about the time you tried to spit out gum and it stuck to the door.
Yeah, I did that too.
Gum, puke, whatever.
Oh, that's
fun. Next week can be part of the kaleidoscope of puke, gum, and puke.
Ooh, gum was one of our best topics.
Yeah, that was one of our best shows ever, is World of Gum.
FMU, you're on the radio.
Why didn't that story come up then?
I made it. Hi, Frangry. Hi, Andy. It's the Pizza Poltergeist.
Hi, Pizza.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
I've got an airplane sort of horror story.
Okay, let's hear it. Make it quick because we're running out of time.
One time, I made a paper airplane when I was 6 years old, and I threw it at my brother, and it literally blew up his eyeball.
pizza.
It went directly through his eye socket. He had to get reconstructive surgery, and to this day, he won't speak to me.
That reminds me of the climax of Star Wars.
All right, thanks for calling. Have a good one.
Bullseye.
Goodbye.
All right, I don't have any winners this week.
Sometimes in warfare,
although,
there are no winners.
Should we just award Tony Liu the Clown a
t-shirt? I think Tony Liu...
Because he's awesome?
I'm going to want to listen to the show again just for Tony Liu's calls, because I'm thinking to myself, what the hell happened there?
How did the clown even come up?
I don't know. He was on his way to Clown Fest, and then I had to ask, why were you going to Clown Fest?
That was so weird.
Because I thought he might have been like, you know, he's a guy who sells clown makeup or something. He's a vendor, you know. Or he's,
although Chris from Brooklyn's
he has to set up the chairs
was
for Clown
an
Fest.
Actual airplane horror story.
I'm sorry, which one is that again?
With flames, and the puking woman, and him going.
Oh,
Mom,
and Tiffany's
if
not
we
being
die,
open on
I'm
Sunday.
Never talking to you again.
That's the worst part.
Like
Tiffany's
an obnoxious
not being open on Sunday.
Kid.
Well, frankly, a difficult decision is going to have to be made. Clowns or Tiffany?
Clowns deserves a shirt, but it wasn't on topic. Or it's, at least it's not
what
getting...
What do you mean, oh, wasn't on topic?
Well, it was,
now you're
it
play
wouldn't
the,
be getting
the on-topic
shirt
card?
Because the airplane thing was good. It would be getting a shirt because the clown thing was good.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with
Wait,
the clown thing?
We have to finish this.
I think this is an anything goes kind of show.
Oh, really?
So I would say...
Yeah, I guess you're right. The winner of Topic Kaleidoscope is Tony Liu.
Oh.
Email me your t-shirt size and address. At shutupweirdo@wfmu.org. Andy, do you want me to do the station ID or are you going to do it?
You know, I just realized that we didn't have any theme music
you
loaded up.
Very fast on that.
Yeah, and I hit my eyeglasses on the microphone.
I'm sure everybody cares.
I guess that means this is the point where I should say you have been listening to Shut Up Weirdo on the Rutabaga WFMU East Orange,
what?
WMFU Mount Hope. Live and archived at...
Archived.
Isn't that how you pronounce it?
Yep.
WFMU.org. This is Shut Up Weirdo. I'm Andy.
And I'm Frank.
Next is Stuff You Should Know.
Really, Andy?
Right?
You don't have it written down today?
No, I don't. I was just so angry.
All right, let's go. Come on. I'm over this.
Okay. Visit us at ShutUpWeirdo.com.
Bye.
Twitter, blah, blah, blah.
Turn off my mic, please.
Let's end it here.
It's time for Josh and Chuck and Stuff You Should Know, the program that exposes the internal workings of life on this planet. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is available from HowStuffWorks.com. Tonight, a timely topic 1 month after the big East Coast earthquake, as Josh and Chuck discuss whether such events can in fact be man-made. And then in part two, they discuss the practice of extraordinary renditions and secret government prisons. Now here's Josh and Chuck.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. You know us as Chuck and Josh.
We debated this. It's Josh and Chuck.
It's Chuck and Josh now.
Dude, it's... not. What do you mean now?
Well, it was Josh and Chuck, and then it became Chuck and Josh. I'm sure in the future it'll just keep rotating. It's like the wheel of time, right?
I just... Josh and Chuck has a ring that I enjoy.
How about Josh? Or
and,
Chuck.
And Matt.
Yeah, with special guest producer Matt.
Jerry's not here to spank us when we air.
No, which means we can get away with a lot of stuff.
Right.
Although, I think we're self-regulating these days.
Yeah, we're doing pretty well.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Chuck.
Yes.
You want to get into it?
Sure.
You remember the earthquake in May of 2008?
In China?
Sichuan province?
Yeah.
Yeah. Killed like 80,000 people, I think, right?
Awful. A 7.9.
Yes.
In the old Richter scale.
Right. Is that how we pronounce it? No. I thought you spoke German.
I just thought it'd be funny if we mispronounce like even things that everybody knows, because we have a reputation for mispronouncing difficult things.
All right. Let's start doing it.
The Richter scale.
Okay. Well, the on the Richter scale. Can we do that?
Sure.
It hit, what did you say, a 7.9?
Yeah, thereabouts.
And like I said, killed 80,000 people. It was an enormous, horrific earthquake. And very quickly, you know, I remember NPR was there because they were like covering the Olympics. So everybody went to Sichuan instead.
Right. Sure.
Because it was right before the Olympics. Right.
We were here.
We were here. But NPR did like a month of coverage on this earthquake. Like everybody was talking about it.
But yeah.
One thing that flew under the radar that at least my radar, was that there were and still are allegations that the earthquake was actually man-made, at least hastened by a man-made structure.
Yeah.
Specifically the...
You're pointing at me. The Zipping Poo Dam?
Something like that, yeah.
Zipping Poo?
Zipping Poo?
Yeah, that's something like that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it flew below my radar, too. I had no idea about this.
Did you see the, like, on a search, there's, like, tons of articles on it. They just got no play.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we're talking about is something that's called reservoir-induced seismicity.
Yes.
Right?
And to a certain degree, induced seismicity to a greater extent.
I don't know what you just said.
Not only reservoirs. I got a couple of other nuggets.
Yeah. Chuck dug up some other man-made earthquake phenomena, right?
Sure.
But let's start with reservoir-induced seismicity, right? Or let's start with dams. How about that?
Well, that's a good place to start.
Or should we start with earthquakes? Actually, if you want to know about earthquakes, go listen to our How Earthquakes Work podcast, which is pretty good.
Did we do that?
Yeah.
God, I'm getting old.
I know. Days are just kind of melting together.
I was honestly thinking we should do one on earthquakes.
Yeah, we already did. Okay. Remember the S waves?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure.
All right, so we'll talk about dams instead. These things are, dams are getting bigger and bigger. Yeah. As our engineering prowess, is not ours, but humanity's,
sure,
is getting better and better.
And our needs are growing.
Right.
Sure.
So I think constructing a dam in the first place, what you're doing is you're just putting a wall up in front of a river and letting the water backfill, right?
Pretty easy.
But by doing this, number one, you're changing the river hydrology downstream.
Yeah.
E.g., the people downstream are in big trouble.
Right. Well, sure.
But you're also, you have to take into account the area around the dam. What was normally once just dry land,
right,
with a river running through it and probably some villages. You know, Lake Lanier. I think there's no natural lake in Georgia. They're all man-made, from what I understand.
That's what I understand, too.
But Lake Lanier specifically has a town beneath it. And when the reservoir decreases... you can see a Gulf 76 sign popping up out of it. Have you ever seen that?
No, really?
It's creepy.
That is creepy.
That's why also they can never find somebody who dies in Lake Lanier because they get caught up in like power lines or
right.
in a convenience store or something like that.
Shopping.
Yeah, under the water. Shopping dead.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But around this area in what used to be dry land, there's also dirt and rock and oftentimes mountains.
Sometimes fault lines.
Because you want to use the natural geography of the area to hold this water in, right?
You ever been to the Hoover Dam?
I haven't. I've flown over it. Does that count?
Well, sure.
I got a good gander of it at like 10,000 feet.
Yeah, if you ever go, a lot of people drive over the Hoover Dam or they stand on the edge of the Hoover Dam like Bob Mould suggests. But I suggest that if you're there, take the time to pay the dough. It's like, I don't know how much it is, $10, and go down and take the tour.
Wow.
That's my only tip of the day.
I've seen it on the TV.
It's really cool looking.
Yeah.
And you can stand there and marvel at it, but when you get down in the guts of it is when you're really like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a marvel of engineering.
Absolutely.
Right. And like I said, it utilizes the surrounding geography to hold the water,
big
right?
Time. Mm-hmm.
But when you do this, you're applying a lot of water that mm-hmm. didn't used to be there to the surrounding, say, mountains, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you have something that we call landslides, right?
Yes, and that's what's usually you think of. You don't think of earthquakes when you think of that kind of activity. You think of landslides.
Right. You want to tell them about the Italian landslide because you love to do the accents?
Yeah.
But do it in a really somber tone.
Well, I'm not going to do it in an Italian accent. But it is one of the deadliest in history, and it was in northern Italy in 63. And it killed 2,500 people. An entire village was wiped out. When 400 million cubic yards of mountain rock fell into the reservoir. I'm not going to pronounce that.
The Vaillant Dam?
Yeah, it looks French.
Yeah, well, it's in the Alps, so it's close to France.
Yeah, and it basically created a tidal wave 856 feet tall.
Right, so this 400 million cubic yards of rock goes into the reservoir, displaces all that water. And, yeah, the wave I read, this wave that was generated by it crested over the top of the dam.
Yeah, that the dam was 856, so it was higher than that.
It was 28. It was equal to a 28-story building.
Wow.
Imagine that. On top of the dam. And it just came down.
Crazy.
And washed villages away.
You're just sitting there in Italy in 63 enjoying your grappa.
Yeah.
Having a good time.
Not for long.
No.
But apparently it took a full 2 minutes to get down there to wipe out the village.
How long?
2 minutes.
Wow.
From what I read.
That's like the thing in the mudslide in Guatemala. No warning.
No. And there's also some in China that apparently have been pretty disastrous. Uh-huh. Thanks to a dam there. The Three Gorges Dam, which is a pretty famous dam. It's on the Yangtze River, right?
Yeah, they were kind of worried about that one.
Yeah, and they kind of should be from what I understand.
Yeah.
As whenever, just about any time they raise or lower the reservoir or when they initially filled it, landslides started happening. And there was one in 2007 that buried a bus. I guess it just kind of caught them unawares. What a horrific death.
To be buried in a bus?
To be buried alive in any way, but yeah, sure. Bus would probably be bad.
Especially in a bus. You ever taken a bus trip?
Yes.
I would not want to be buried alive on a bus trip.
Nor would I.
No.
Because you're like, I can't believe I'm surrounded by these people right. while I'm alive, you
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not to make light of it.
No.
Okay. Don't want to come across as insensitive.
No. So, Chuck, these are just landslides we're talking about. That's totally different. You know, destabilizing the dirt that holds up mountain rock is totally different from an earthquake, right?
Indeed.
So how do we get to the reservoir-induced seismicity? How do we get to a dam creating an earthquake?
Well, in the case of the one in China, the Zipingpu Dam is 50 stories tall. It can store more than 1 billion cubic meters of water from the Minjiang River.
Right.
So all of a sudden you have a regular river, and then all of a sudden it weighs, you know, a billion cubic meters more. Well, that's not a weight, but you know what I mean.
Right.
So that's going to create a lot more pressure on the ground beneath it.
Right.
And if there's a fault line there, then you're in big trouble.
Yeah, and we don't really know whether there are fault lines there when we're constructing dams, it turns out. Apparently, there was a survey in 1990 by the World Bank that found that 49 projects, like more than three quarters of them that were surveyed, all had unexpected geological activity, right?
Yeah.
And apparently, it costs millions and millions to do a survey of an area. And you may find that, yeah, there's a fault line there that we didn't know about. So companies who build dams oftentimes don't want to know that whether or not there's a fault line there.
I've seen that not a lot of research goes in. Well, I don't want to say not a lot of research, but many times not enough research goes into the underground situation.
Right, and for the Three Gorges Dam, they're actually it's built over two fault lines.
Yeah.
And they're just waiting for this thing to blow, apparently.
Yeah, and they said it might be a big one, too.
So with the 2008 earthquake, China kind of got into this issue of reservoir-induced seismicity. And it's already kind of cloudy. It's kind of one of those walks like a duck scenarios.
Sure.
Because you have increased seismic activity in areas as reservoirs are being filled.
Right.
You have earthquakes that people weren't expecting,
right?
Obviously, but even geologists weren't expecting,
right?
Or seismologists, with an epicenter under the dam, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, yes, dams are creating earthquakes,
right?
But again, there's a lot of money at stake. If people become more aware of RIS, which is what people in the know call it, then people who live downstream from a dam,
right,
are going to want their houses earthquake-proof, which is going to raise the cost through the roof.
Yeah, and they're not going to do that.
Right. And like I said, with China now in it, it's become obfuscated even further.
Yeah, because in the case of China, there's probably a lot of houses that need to be retrofitted.
Well, not just that. The government's politically in the hot seat right now, and the earthquake in 2008, they tried to distance themselves because it was a government project. And building a dam in and of itself, it's a very utilitarian pursuit if a dam can create an earthquake and kill people, or there are landslides and that kills people, because you're helping, you know, X number of people. Like the Zipingpu Dam generates like 760,000 kilowatt hours
right.
of electricity.
Oh, yeah, you need dams for sure.
You do, but at the same time, so it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, there's a bus full of people that just got buried, but we have all this electricity.
Right.
So when you throw that in, when you throw the money in, and then a 1994 paper in the Journal of Environmental Law and Litigation. Do you get that?
That sounds like a laugh a minute.
It does. It concluded that people in other countries who were affected by reservoir-induced seismicity from American-built dams
right.
had legal grounds to sue those people in the U.S. for damages.
Right. Well, that
so
surprised me.
So basically, there's a lot of people out there who are like, RIS doesn't exist, but it does.
Right.
Yeah.
And, it's not just the water pressure sitting on top of these plates that can cause it. What also happens is the water seeps down in there and fills up all the little cracks. And if there's way more water doing this, then that can cause fractures to become larger or to shift around. And that might be one of the reasons too.
Right. And it also lubricates it, doesn't it? It goes down
Indeed.
To these fault lines. Cause you think about it, like you have tectonic plates, you have fault lines where the earth is basically sitting like just on the tiniest ledge of one plate over another.
Yeah.
And if you get some water in there and lube it up, then they slip and you have an earthquake.
It's called pore pressure, my friend.
Nice.
It's pore pressure is the fluid pressure in the pores and the fractures of the rocks. And it acts against the weight of the rock. So when pore pressure is low, the imbalance of what they call it in situ earth. Have you ever heard that phrase?
Does it mean like stable bedrock or something like that?
Yeah, sort of. It's Latin. It can mean a bunch of different things. But in the case of the earth, it means in the place, as in water or oil that hasn't been extracted yet.
Oh, yeah.
Or gas, yeah. Let's say, whatever's down there, any kind of natural earth. So the imbalance of the in-situ earth stresses will cause the occasional earthquake. And if the pore pressure is increased, then it takes a lot less of an imbalance for these to get out of whack.
Gotcha.
And one of the reasons that that might happen is if you inject something into the subsurface or if you extract something from the subsurface. Like maybe oil.
Right.
Or water.
Right.
Or gas.
Yeah.
And that all made sense because I've often posed the question, does the earth need its oil? Like, we're extracting oil, but maybe it has a really vital function down there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe as a lubricant. I kind of found out that wasn't necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
That, if we pull out all the oil from the, well, we can't pull out all the oil.
I think it leaves about a third. They leave at least a third in all reservoirs because we just don't have the technology to get to.
Really?
Yeah.
But what I gathered from researching this a little bit today is that it doesn't necessarily, it's such a small amount
mm-hmm.
still compared to the density of the earth that these like small empty pockets might make things move around
right.
and cause like some minor tremors. But it's not like we're going to have the big one one day if we tap the oil out right. of the earth.
But we also use like water injection technology too.
Bingo.
And that can cause an earthquake, right?
Yeah, and that's when you inject like steam or water or CO2 to either move the oil around or heat it up, make it more viscous.
Mm-hmm.
And that means it'll flow to a channel where it's easier to tap it. Or they do that for water wells too.
Right.
To make water more readily available.
I think there were some surprising earthquakes in Colorado in the 90s that had to do with natural gas drilling.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, the other thing they do is they inject wastewater into the earth.
I did not know that.
I didn't either.
I always wondered where it went.
Well, a lot of they
I just assumed we were all drinking it.
Well, I think it's a certain amount we do. But there's way more wastewater than there are mouths to drink it. So evidently, they'll drill down into the earth and inject. They'll supposedly clean it. Well, I say supposedly. They clean it.
Yeah.
I've never witnessed it, but why would they lie? Why would they lie?
I don't know. I mean, who would lie right. when money's at stake? Chuck?
So they inject the wastewater back into the earth, and that's, hasn't created any problems thus far.
Yeah, yet.
Who knows?
I remember we talked about, like, carbon sequestration once where we were talking about taking CO2, remember capturing it from smokestacks and then putting it into
yeah.
the earth?
Uh-huh.
And we were wondering, like, what effect is that going to have?
Who knows?
Probably, well, we'll all find out one day when we do hit the big one.
Right.
From removing oil and then injecting, like, carbon, CO2 into the earth.
Right.
We'll find out what happens.
So many of these studies are all like, oh, no, it's not doing anything. But, like, I'm of the belief that holding a cell phone up to your brain it's going to cause some damage. Another saying, no, it doesn't, but we haven't studied anyone who's done it for 30 years every day.
Right, yeah, that's a good point.
And then yeah, iPhone's like a little computer, you know?
I know. It's like, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
I think we're going to see some fallout from that in about 25, 30 years, brother.
You know, Conger over at Stuff Mom Never Told You wrote an article on cell phones making you sterile.
Oh, keeping it in your pocket?
Yeah.
Next to the boys?
Yeah. Don't want to do that.
Eee.
So, Chuck, one more thing. We should say very specifically that even though people, it seems like there is a consensus that RIS does exist, right?
Yes.
There's a lot of people who want to downplay it.
Sure.
Like the Chinese pointed out that prior to this earthquake in Sichuan in 2008, the biggest RIS-linked earthquake happened in 1967 in India, and it was like a 6.5.
Right.
And they point that was the biggest ever that was induced by a dam.
Right, right.
So we're not entirely certain how big these things can be, or how much dams can contribute. But again, we don't really know what we're doing building dams either, do we?
Right.
Right.
Mining, too, that can cause them. And I also read that building construction, like that tower in Taipei,
mm-hmm.
that caused some minor earthquakes because it was so big.
That's got to put hair on your chest if you're the project manager of a project that causes earthquakes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Press on.
And we should also point out, lastly, dams can't create earthquakes all by themselves. There have to be a bunch of factors present. Like, it has to be built on a fault line.
Right, right.
It has to be huge. The dam, I think, has to be at least 100 meters high
right.
to create earthquakes that really register. But pretty much anytime you build a dam, like around a fault line, seismic activity increases as you fill it up. So
it's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're not anti-dam. We should point that out. We love dams.
Yeah. I guess that's it, right?
I think so. I don't have anything else.
All right. Well, if you want to read a little more about this and see some gripping pictures, you can type in humans and earthquakes. I think that'll probably bring this article up, right?
Probably so.
This episode of Stuff You Should Know is brought to you by GoToMeeting, the affordable way to meet with clients and colleagues. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/stuff.
And this is a short one, Chuck, wasn't it?
Yeah, I have some stuff to inject here at the end into our subsurface. We have some announcements about New York, right? And T-shirts?
Yeah, New York. You know, we're going to New York. We're going to, like, throw our hat and do a little twirl in the middle of Times Square because we made it after all. We're going to be at the Knitting Factory. We're having a Stuff You Should Know meet and greet.
Happy hour.
Uh-huh. Come hang out with us. I mean, you pay for your own drinks or whatever, but we're not charging anything to get in.
Yeah.
We may or may not be wearing shirts. And it's going to be at the Knitting Factory.
We're going to have shirts. We're going to have t-shirts. We can go ahead and say that.
That's right. We are. We will have shirts.
Stuff You Should Know t-shirts. The very first ones. And Josh designed it. That's how awesome it is.
Oh, go on.
You did.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Anyway, that's at the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn on Monday, June 7th from 5:30 to 7:30, right?
Yes. And a concert will follow in the main space sponsored by the Onion newspaper, who are buddies now.
Yeah.
And I think that's like 10 or 12 bucks if you want to get into that. And we'll be hanging out all night. So
yes, we'll be there. And then Wednesday, June 9th, we're doing an all-star team trivia.
Yes.
Featuring us, Joe Randazzo, who is the editor of The Onion, and...
And a couple of other famous type, nerdy famous people that are funny.
Very nice.
But we can't commit to those just yet because we don't want to disappoint you in case they don't show up.
I guess we should tell them where it is, right?
You don't think they should just, like, drive around New York looking
just
for
guess.
Us? yes, it's at the Bell House, Josh, and that right. is in Brooklyn, New York. And it goes from 7 to 9, as trivia starts at 7, doors at 6:30.
Right.
So show up early and rub elbows with us and drink an adult beverage with us. And trivia starts at 7, is game on for the next 2 hours. And should be a really fun time.
Right on, Chuck.
Sounds good, huh?
Yes.
And we'll also put this on the Facebook page, too, just so people know.
And if you're not a fan of ours, or if you don't like our fan page on Facebook, go check it out. It's we're on there a lot. Actually, Chuck is just killing it.
Talking
to people.
Sure.
He walks around shaking hands, kissing babies.
Right,
it's
yeah.
crazy. It's awesome. And we have a Twitter account, SYSK Podcast.
You're killing the Twitter. You're very funny on there. And one last thing. Yeah. If you listen to our Guatemala podcast, part one and two, you know that we worked with an organization down there called Cooperative for Education.
Yeah.
And they have a text donation drive going. And if you aren't a super cheapskate, then you should give a measly $5.
$5.
To get textbooks for life for a Guatemalan student.
Yeah, you don't even have to actually spend any money. You just pay your bill plus $5 at the end of the month.
You'll never even know.
Right. You just text the word stuff, S-T-U-F-F, to 20222. You'll get a text back, and it'll say, you sure? Or something like that. And you text yes back.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. Bada that boom, easy. Bada bing. And what, data and wireless rates apply, maybe?
Yes, they definitely do in certain cases. And if you live outside the United States, you can go to the website, coed.uc.org, and you can donate there if you live outside the United States.
Booyah.
Worthy cause.
Let's do listener mail now.
Do we do t-shirts?
No.
T-shirt contest is officially on, has been going on. It closes at the end of the month, May 31st at midnight.
Yes.
And
that's Eastern time, right?
Eastern time.
Yeah.
If you submitted once, you got to resubmit. Do a one-sided design, not on both sides. And that's pretty much our only limitations at this point. Except you have to be American.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, you can't be a part of this.
Yeah. If
you
it's
have
a,
to
yeah.
be a bystander. An innocent bystander, right. We hope. But, yeah, a bystander if you're not American. This
right.
is an American Stuff You Should Know t-shirt throwdown.
Yes, and we would love for it to be everybody, but it's the laws of Earth is what I've been saying, and I can't win a contest in Africa, so.
Well, Chuck's going to night school right now to study international law, so
yeah.
Once he gets his master's, we will be holding contests elsewhere, right?
Indeed.
If you want to send us a listener mail, you just shoot it in an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called Can Humans Cause Earthquakes, originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on May 27th, 2010. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast. Now for part two, Josh and Chuck examine ghost prisons. This episode was originally podcast on June 22nd, 2010.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. Across this vast gulf of a table in our brand new VOC heavy studio
yeah.
is Charles W. Chuck Bryant, right?
We're in, people. This is our brand new studio.
This is our first time recording it.
And now it's we got to get used to this weirdness all over again.
I know. Things just can't be normal, can they?
So now we're in weird chairs and the table is huge and Jerry... I can't even talk about Jerry because she's not even in the room with us anymore.
Wait, Chuck, did you just pronounce huge with the out the H, with the H being silent? Did you just say huge?
I've been saying human being and huge ever since I came back from New York.
Huge.
Yeah, it's huge.
Okay. Huge.
And Jerry isn't even in our vision, line of vision, and I hate that.
Yeah, it's odd. Things are odd. There's like a burlap curtain.
I'm wearing headphones.
Made out of old potato sacks. All right, Chuck, let's get this going, all right?
All right.
Enough griping from us.
I know, seriously.
Nobody cares.
No one cares.
I had like a great intro to this one.
Let's hear it.
But I can't remember. Oh, yes, Chuck. You know that there's a lot of finger pointing about how 9/11 was allowed to happen, right?
Is there?
There has been.
Okay.
I don't know if there is anymore.
All right.
But at first, there was a lot of finger pointing, and a lot of that fell on Clinton.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because, you know, Bush is pretty new. He was a newbie still.
Right.
As far as presidents go, and Clinton had been president for two terms.
Blame it on the previous guy. It's an American tradition.
It really is. But the thing is, Clinton's administration, Clinton's CIA, had passed along a list of high-valued targets of people in the Al-Qaeda network before the September 11th attacks ever happened. And there was a lot of talk about what to do with this list of people
right.
After September 11th. Like, you know, say 11 a.m. on September 11th, the talk started about
sure.
what to do with this list as it became clear that this was Al-Qaeda
right.
that had carried out this heinous attack, right? And one of the things that we did with it was to publish a deck of cards.
I have that deck.
Do you really?
Yeah, a friend of mine gave me that deck.
Yes. Do you remember that you could get them like at convenience stores and
yeah, sure.
American public, be on the lookout for these guys and yeah, also yeah. enjoy some, you know, Texas Hold'em with right. them as well.
And mine is camo on the other side.
Is it really?
Yeah, sure.
That's appropriate. But so there's a lot of talk about what to do with this list of people. We had their names. In a lot of cases, we knew where they were. And one of the ideas that was suggested was to start assassinating all of them. And that one was, I think, probably fairly well entertained. But the CIA had been, as far as we know, out of practice with assassinations for a while.
Yeah, sure they have.
So instead, we decided to start stepping up a program called Extraordinary Rendition.
Right.
Right?
Which would be a great band name, as soon as I heard it.
You think everything's a great band name.
No, I'm not. Everyone thinks everything's a good band name, but not me.
No, okay. No, you're the exception, that. Right?
I'm the guy who named his band El Cheapo, so sure.
I know, it's a good one.
Yeah.
What was the other one? A Designer Kitty or...
What?
There was another band name recently that you liked.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Well, anyway, this Extraordinary Rendition program actually dated back to the Bush Sr. presidency.
Right.
In January 1992, George Herbert Walker Bush signed a presidential finding authorizing Extraordinary Rendition, which basically is kidnapping.
Yeah, a finding, we should say, is sort of like an executive order.
Right.
It's one of those things that a president can just say, make it happen.
But it's pretty much a secret executive order.
Right.
I mean, like, its existence can be made public, but its contents aren't.
Right.
And actually, the executive order that Bush Sr. signed allowing or authorizing Extraordinary Rendition is still classified, right?
Yeah.
But what we know is that it was used a couple of dozen times, largely in the Clinton era, and... For the most part, it was used to go into countries that harbored terrorists, kidnap the terrorists, and then bring them to American courts for trial.
Yeah, or other places.
Well, that kind of stepped up after 2001.
Right.
After Bush Jr. came into power, the CIA stopped, I guess, kind of wanting to put their faith in American courts,
right,
and risk the coin toss of an American jury,
sure,
going in favor of a terrorist,
right.
So they started using Extraordinary Rendition to third-party nations. So
yeah.
Now, not only are we kidnapping foreign nationals, we're kidnapping foreign nationals and taking them to other countries that they don't have an affiliation with,
yeah,
so that we can basically outsource torture, interrogation, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and we should point out at this point that during this kind of rendition, this isn't the kind of rendition you want to hear if you're a detainee, because it basically means you can't, you don't have a lot of contact with the outside world, as in none.
Right.
You don't have rights to habeas corpus. You can't call your attorney and say, you know, get me out of here on bail.
Right.
That kind of thing. It's very secret. You're abducted. I think one of the stories you listed was a guy that they set up a fake fundraiser and invited this guy to it,
yeah,
in order to capture him.
Yeah, after 9/11, like, the world stage turned into like this plot exposition montage from a Mission Impossible movie,
right, or a Simpsons episode.
Sure, yeah. People just started disappearing. Actually,
yeah, pretty much.
And by the very very geopolitical definition of disappearing, it was they were kidnapped by a government entity and kept out of the purview of the courts and stripped of any kind of rights, right?
Right.
So the problem is we went from using a couple of extraordinary rendition on a couple of dozen people throughout the entire 90s.
Right.
To, by the New York Times estimate, at least 307 between late 2001 and 2005. That's probably a very, very low number, right? So we go from a couple of dozen in a decade to 307 and more in about 4 years. And we don't exactly know where to put these people. The CIA didn't want to bring them to the U.S. because they didn't want them to be prosecuted in American courts.
Right.
They wanted these people to lose all their rights and to disappear so that they could be kept for as long as the CIA wanted them. Right.
Until they found out what they needed.
So what they did was set up a network of secret prisons. Right? Ghost prisons, as they're called.
Yes, and they're known as ghost prisoners.
There you go.
And they are the
podcast.
Yeah, if only. Human Rights Watch, you've heard of that group. They have a list on the internet about a list of ghost prisoners, suspected mm-hmm. ghost prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very long, and the CIA is always like, oh, we don't comment on that kind of thing because those lists are probably not accurate.
Right.
That they towed the company line there.
Right.
Because the CIA couldn't say, yeah, that list is really accurate, and we do this.
The CIA, for years and years and years, after their cover was blown, would never acknowledge that there were secret prisons, right?
Well, yeah, but GW had to come clean in, what, 06?
In Atlanta.
Oh, was it in Atlanta?
With Sonny Perdue standing next to him.
Really?
Yeah, he acknowledged the existence of secret prisons, and it was probably, after seeing W,
right.
It was probably just like a snafu, or he didn't mean to say it. He was probably right. tricked into admitting it,
right.
But he did. And so it came out that, yes, these do exist, but we don't use them any longer. And then in January of 2009,
uh-huh.
Obama, the first thing he does is shuts down the CIA secret prison network three
yeah.
years after they stopped using it, apparently.
Well, that was on his second full day in office.
Mm-hmm.
He did that. But ProPublica, you've heard of them too, right?
Yes.
They say that there are dozens of ghost prisoners still unaccounted for. So it's, you know, he says he shut them down, but they say ProPublica, all these human rights groups say that they're still, they don't know where these dudes are.
Well, the other possibility is that the secret prisons have been shut down, but those people are dead. That's kind of, that was par for the course in a lot of ways for the CIA secret prisons. If you have no rights whatsoever,
sure.
If you die in custody, nobody cares.
Like, let's say
I shouldn't say no one cares. There's no accountability for that.
Right. So, right? For instance, let's say you were you died of asphyxiation because you were held in a shipping container.
Yeah. Have you seen The Road to Guantanamo?
No.
It's a kind of, I guess, dock.
No, I know about it. I just haven't seen it.
It's worth seeing.
Yeah.
I mean,
I check it out.
It's worth seeing. But there's a scene in there that shows that these people being rounded up and shipped across Afghanistan
right.
in a huge like shipping container, and like when they open the doors the next day, like most of them are dead. It's
yeah.
gross. It's really disturbing.
Well, it's like when you get the pet turtle in the shoebox. You gotta mom always says, you know, remember the holes in the top.
Yeah.
So apparently mom wasn't around to remind them of this.
No, people weren't thinking like that.
Yeah, and the one dude froze to death?
Yeah, in the secret prison. And I have to say, they had some pretty cool code names.
Yeah.
One of the first and one of the largest was codenamed Salt Pit, and it was in a brick factory, an abandoned brick factory outside of Kabul.
Uh-huh.
A junior CIA officer who was kind of new on this kind of thing ordered a detainee stripped naked
uh-huh.
and chained to the floor, and he was left overnight, and it can get pretty cold apparently in Kabul.
I guess so.
And the guy froze to death.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's entirely possible that these two dozen people, and I'm surprised it's not more, but these two dozen people who are unaccounted for
right.
are dead.
Right. That's probably the case.
Yeah.
You mentioned the names. I dug up a couple of more. And I would say these are probably top 10 lists of camps you don't want to go to. But Camp Dark Prison was one.
That's a bad one.
And my favorite was Camp Bond Steel. BONDSTEEL.
Nice.
Camp Bond Steel.
And thank you for spelling it.
Well, it's not steel as in take. It's steel as in this is
sure.
metal that I will beat you with.
Right. This is metal that you will live behind
right.
for the rest of your life.
Because so Camp Bond Steel.
If you... Well, let's talk about what you lose when you're in a CIA prison, the rights you lose. Traditionally, do you remember like a few years ago, the whole, you know, what are the people in Guantanamo Bay? Are they enemy combatants? Are they
right.
non-combatants?
Sure.
Are they terrorists? Like, what kind of rights do they have?
Right.
Do they fall under the Geneva Convention? And it was largely decided by the Bush administration that, no, these people didn't have Geneva Convention rights. Right,
right. right.
Under the purview of the Geneva Convention, the Red Cross is charged with going to visit enemy combatants and prisoners of war
right.
On both sides and see how they're treated. With the secret prisons, first of all, the people, no one knew that these people had been, you know,
Yeah.
Kidnapped.
What wouldn't be a very good secret prison?
Exactly.
If the Red Cross knew about it.
Where they were. Right. And, yeah, they were denied, you know, the Red Cross, even after the Red Cross found out that they were here, and I know you've got this guy here, and we want to visit them in the secret prison. We'll be quiet. So, yeah, he's like, no, we're not letting you in.
Right.
So that kind of shook things up. That's a big deal.
Sure.
There's no habeas corpus.
No. And like you mentioned earlier, they would go to countries where they typically might torture people, and because the U.S. isn't allowed to, obviously, to torture.
Well, they weren't at the time.
Right.
This is before it was – we decided, yeah, we torture.
Right, but we outsourced it, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
So we would, let's say, set up in – I think you said the first one was in Thailand?
Yeah.
So they were looking around. They're like, where would I go if I wanted to set up a secret prison where you might be able to torture somebody? And Thailand was like, come on over. You can set up shop here. And – They outsourced it, but from what I read in your article was, you wrote this, right?
Yeah.
From what I read was the U.S. could say, like, hey, ask him about the microfilm.
Right. We would pass along questions or direction or something like that. And the last – I wrote this thing in – I can't remember. Sometime in 2007, I think late 2007. And at the time, the last report I'd had of somebody being held in a secret prison was in Africa, I believe.
North Africa, yeah.
And some Americans and Canadians reported having contact with Americans in these, like, African prisons.
Yeah, Westerners.
Yeah.
Being held captive secretly.
Sure.
And some guy behind the curtain saying, use the dental drill.
Exactly.
Is it safe?
And he sounds like he's from Omaha. And he shouldn't, because this is, you know, Africa. And other places, other black site host countries.
Yeah, that's what they're called, just like the black budgets and black ops.
Mm-hmm.
These are black sites.
Right, or ghost prisons.
So you put black in front of it, and if it's related to the government.
And there's no description. There's just like a huge budget on a line item.
Yeah, with a Sharpie
that
is X'd out.
That's a secret prison.
Yeah.
There are some of the other countries are Azerbaijan, Oman, Jordan, Morocco, Syria, Egypt, Algeria, all of these places were receiving prisoners. Didn't necessarily have a black site, have, but then most of the black site countries, host countries, were Eastern European, like Lithuania and Romania.
Yeah, but once it came out, though, they would probably try to shut it down, right? Because they didn't want this to get out to the press.
Well, not only did they not want it to get out to the press, they didn't necessarily want it to get out to the president of that country. In a lot of cases, it was like the CIA, the U.S. ambassador of that country,
right,
and a couple of, like, say, Bulgaria's secret police, like, high commanders. Those are the only people on the planet who knew that there was a secret prison in Bulgaria.
What are they getting out of
Romania? I wondered that myself too. I mean, like,
it's got to be money, right?
Sure, it would have to be, because do you really think Bulgarians are quite as amped up about American patriotism as, say, you know, the average American is?
Yeah,
I wouldn't think so. And especially a Bulgarian secret police officer, you know.
Well, yeah.
So yeah, I would think money.
Well, what I said though a second ago is they would close, like, Thailand when the word got out that they were doing this, said, no, we should close this. But it seems like every time it happened, they would just find a different country and then go set up shop there.
Right. And with Eastern Europe in particular, it was a little prickly or ticklish because, well, when the Washington Post broke this story, they even said in the article, like, we're not going to reveal the names of the host countries because it's so sensitive that these countries' governments are really going to have problems on their hands when it comes out.
Oh, yeah.
And indeed, they did at first. But the reason why is because these were all post-Soviet bloc countries that had, you know, adopted democracies after the fall of the Soviet Union.
Right.
And were now, you know, involved in this horrible secret prison network.
Right.
You know? You were talking about when word got out. Do you know how word got out?
Well, is this a Thailand one?
No.
Word got out on what then?
On, like, the existence of the secret prison
network. Oh, period.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't a canary singing? Singing like a canary?
No, there was
still a pigeon?
There was. Basically, it was the CIA's fault. They didn't do their legwork. They didn't do their homework.
Oh, with the manifest for the planes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is what cracks me up. The CIA,
this is the funny part,
is kidnapping people, taking them to a secret prison network that they've set up.
Right.
And yet they're honest about flight manifests.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I don't get.
So there was a Swedish TV producer who basically did some like hard-hitting journalism. I think it was called Cold Facts was the translation of the Swedish
show.
With
Sven Svensson.
We'll call him Sven Svensson. Yeah. I think that's good. And if that's not his name, I'll bet Sven Svensson is better than his real name.
Sure.
So Sven was I guess, investigating the extradition of two Swedish citizens to Egypt for questioning.
Right.
They were suspected terrorists. So Sven starts looking into the plane that took them there.
Right.
And it was a Gulfstream 5.
Yeah, they charter these, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was a Gulfstream 5, and it was registered to a company, Sven found out very quickly, called Premier Executive Transport Services. And it was registered in Dedham, Massachusetts. So Sven calls Premier Executive Transport Services, leaves a message, wants to know about, you know, why they would be transporting suspected terrorists to Egypt.
Right.
And 15 minutes later, gets a call from the Swedish intelligence service saying, like, stop asking questions.
Right.
And so Sven starts looking a little further, and apparently finds out very quickly in very short order that there are 36 planes chartered by the CIA.
Making odd stops.
Making odd stops with the nationalities of the people on board.
Uh-huh.
And they would go from, like, say, Afghanistan.
Yeah, this guy.
To Egypt.
Sure.
To Morocco, and then to Guantanamo.
Yeah, they're flying from Afghanistan to Guantanamo, but somehow they can't get a direct flight, and they stop off at like four places along the way.
Right. And then at each stop, there's somebody whose country of origin is Oman, and
right.
they get off, you know, in Cuba.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was very flimsy. All of the companies were dummy corporations that had like P.O. boxes listed. And, yeah, the Swedish intelligence service basically tipped this guy off, and he blew the whistle. And
right.
I think 2004 was when it really started rolling. Yeah.
No.
Sven Svensson, R.I.P.
So these prisons, Josh, we're not saying that, you know, these are nice guys that shouldn't be picked on. These, you know, these are big time. And the one in Thailand, I think the first one, their first overnight guest was Abu Zubaydah.
Yeah.
And he was a top Al-Qaeda guy. He was captured in a shootout in Pakistan, was recovering in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and I think he probably knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in the hospital saying, I'm still not feeling that great. Maybe I should stay here a little longer. And then he recovers, and then they're like, well, why don't you come stay in our private hotel?
Was he the one that they kidnapped out of his hospital bed in Somalia?
No. They just
he
said
was in Pakistan.
Yeah, he was just recovering after a shootout, and then they brought him to their little secret hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And you pointed out that he was treated well.
He was tortured and treated well.
So you said they fed him breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
And he loved Kit Kats, and they gave him Kit Kats all the time.
Did he?
I don't know. That's what I read.
Well, it said they fed him. He was treated well because they fed him baked chicken and candy bars. But what if on his little questionnaire he filled out like allergic to chocolate and I hate chicken? Maybe that was part of the torture.
That's entirely possible.
I just wanted to bring that up.
There's also Chuck a list on Mother Jones, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Of music, the music of torture, or something like that.
Metallica's high up the list. I know that.
Metallica, Rick Astley.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Barney
they
song.
They rickrolled their...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The Barney song at Guantanamo, very loudly over and over and over again, and the Meow Mix commercial.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would do the Cook's Pest Control here locally.
Looky, 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 here comes Cookie. Cook's Pest Control.
Yeah. The guy I mentioned, though, the Abu Zubaydah. He was joined shortly thereafter by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Who's a high value target.
So I'm sure when he checked in to the secret hotel, the other guy was like, oh, crap, this is not good.
What's odd is that, you know, it took us as many years as it did to start assassinating people. Like, I think it was just in the last couple of months that news broke of some programs that the CIA was outsourcing to, like, Z worldwide, Blackwater.
Right.
And other contractors, ex-Delta Force guys who were, you know, going into Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, and assassinating, like, Al-Qaeda leaders and other terrorist guys, right? Right?
Uh-huh.
So I wonder why we didn't just do that at first and instead, you know, started. I guess we needed info.
Yeah.
Intelligence.
Oh,
we
sure.
had none. So I guess it's probably why they were like, well, we can't kill him.
Yeah, yeah, we want
we
him
need
alive.
To know what's going on.
So we can waterboard him.
Yeah. And then 8 years later, we'll start assassinating
and him. Give them Kit Kats.
Right.
Apparently.
So, oh, latest news on this.
Yeah, there's some pretty recent stuff going on.
Yeah. Did you read about the Physicians for Human Rights report?
Yes.
So basically, there were physicians present at a lot of these enhanced interrogations.
And not just in an observational manner, evidently.
Well, that's what they were supposed to be there for, was to basically right. like, hey, you just almost drowned, so let me make sure you're still alive and breathing and in good health, right?
Yeah.
That's okay, actually, apparently, as far as the American Medical Association and international treaties are concerned.
Right.
You're allowed to do that. You're still fulfilling your purpose as a physician.
Right.
They took it a step further, right?
Yes, they did. They have a report out, Josh, called Experiments in Torture, Evidence of Human Subject Research and Experimentation in the Enhanced Interrogation Program. And from what I gather, the long and short of it is they were gathering information that could later be used to defend in court the torturers. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. I think they were quantifying pain thresholds.
Right.
Like if you waterboard this guy for this long,
uh-huh.
he'll experience a pain of 8.
Right. So they were kind of writing an outline of what you can do and still get defended in a court of law.
Right, which transferred their position as physicians to researchers.
Yeah.
And it transferred the position of these detainees as patients to test subjects.
Exactly.
So they were engaging in human experimentation.
Yeah, pretty much.
And gathering data
Absolutely.
From torture, which is
yeah.
totally illegal.
Yeah.
But isn't everything about the Ghost Prison Network illegal?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Pretty much everything that took place as far as the CIA was concerned after 2001 was illegal. And it's not like we're little babes in the woods. It's not like the CIA's just been, you know,
yeah.
on the up and up since then. But
sure.
this is what this is so – this is recent. This is
yeah.
going on now still, I imagine.
Yeah, there was a another joint study, a 226-page report published in January of this year. And it's a joint study by the – well, there's like four different groups. I won't read all of them. All human rights groups.
Yeah.
And they said of a particular concern to the authors – I'm going to read this verbatim – beyond the overall illegality of the entire project conceived – and executed by the Bush administration is the fate of dozens of men held in secret prisons run by the CIA or transferred to CIA prisons. So they estimate, you said a couple of dozen?
You said a couple dozen, I thought.
Did I? No. They're saying that 94 prisoners had been redacted and had enhanced interrogation techniques to varying degrees performed on 28 of the 94. So this was part of the whole torture memo thing.
How is it that low? I would think it would be way more than that.
Yeah.
You know?
I would too.
So,
well, that's what they found out.
Yeah.
So who knows? It may have been more.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. yeah. It's weird. America in the 21st century was a weird place. The first decade was odd.
Yeah.
If you ask me.
But Obama's trying to shut these down, and I think has for the most part.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
But I'm not saying that there's not, you know, hinky stuff going on there, too.
Definitely not. We're not naive
apologist.
Little babes in the woods.
This episode of Stuff You Should Know is brought to you by GoToMeeting, the affordable way to meet with clients and colleagues. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/stuff.
You got anything else?
No, I'm good. If you want to learn more, you can read my 2007 article. Was there a secret CIA prison network? Just
yes.
type in CIA and prison in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. And that takes us, of course, to listener mail.
No, Josh.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to do just a little quickie New York recap for those of our friends who could not be there.
Dude, New York was huge.
It was odd and weird and so surreal and awesome above all else.
One of the things I learned about our fans, at least our fans in the Brooklyn area.
Yeah, sure.
They are very self-aware and self-conscious people, and that makes them highly relatable to us. So, like, the biggest question I got was, this must be very weird for you, huh?
I didn't get that much.
I got it every time.
Really?
And every time I answer is like, yeah, actually, it's really weird.
Maybe that's because you were standing there like,
Like twitching.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got it a lot, and it was nice. I found it disarming.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So everyone knows we went to New York. We had a few media opportunities. We did a few interviews. But Monday night was when we had our happy hour.
Yes.
At the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn.
With the Onion, which, dude, we couldn't have done any of this without the Onion. Thank you to Dan and Joe.
Yes.
For putting this
huge
stuff together.
Yes.
And just being our buds.
Yeah, that was a real treat to get to know those guys for sure.
Treat.
It was. A sincere sensation. That's
I know,
what I
you sound
Hodgman.
Like my dad. It was a real treat, Josh.
So we have our happy hour. We get there. Tons of people show up. Mm-hmm. The fire department comes at one point because there were too many people there.
I know.
Which was so awesome.
I know.
I was like, is something on fire? And they weren't in a hurry. They were just kind of standing around talking to people like, trying to gauge the amount of people, I think.
Yeah.
So we got to meet people. We got to hang out with people and drink an adult beverage with people. We got to meet Mark, Australian Wagga Wagga Mark.
Yeah, thanks for the koozie, bud.
Yeah, I mean, we got to meet a lot of people who, and I remembered a lot of them from
Sock Ninja
mail.
Showed up on Monday.
Sock Ninja, the dude, Chris and his wife, whose wife was carjacked.
Carjacked, yeah.
Chris Witt.
Yes.
He was there with his wife.
Yeah.
And they were super awesome. They were almost kind of working for us. They were helping with the t-shirts and taking photographs.
Yeah, and there was Greg, I believe.
Yeah.
He was kind of helping me, too.
Uh-huh.
He was helping me, like, move the line along and everything.
Yeah,
There were some really genuinely cool people here.
Everybody there was super cool.
Yes. Yes, as a matter of fact.
And I need to say special thanks to the banjo dude. Remember him?
Yeah.
The guy with the banjo and his girlfriend. They gave us... a lot of people brought gifts. And they brought me this... she made this really neat little egg where she had made a design of thread that was on the egg.
Mm-hmm.
It was really intricate and very cool.
Very cool.
And they also met my friend Justin and helped him out in some ways. And they were very, very cool kids.
And I can't remember her name, but there's a fan that both of us met, but I talked to her for a while.
Grundy?
And she gave us... No, not Grundy. But hey, Grundy.
Yes.
She gave us a molecular gastronomy book.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She just wrote in today.
I can't remember her name. I feel bad, but thank you for it.
Yeah, yeah. It was very awesome.
So hopefully, possibly look for a molecular gastronomy podcast in the future.
And I got CDs and like...
Jerk.
A lot of bands who are like, hey, man, listen to this.
Yes, and we have to go listen to the Large Hadron podcast.
Yes.
I have not yet, but we need to go check them out.
And so that was Monday. So then we had our Wednesday, flash forward to Wednesday, and we had our All-Star Trivia Night at the Bell House in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And this was nuts.
Yes, we had an all-star team that we cobbled together.
500 people or so showed up to play trivia.
Standing room only, for sure.
It was
in this
crazy.
Big room. It was a big venue.
It was like a concert venue.
Yes, like I could see Styx playing there. but yeah, it was standing room only. I would say about 500 people, and we cobbled together this really awesome trivia team.
Yeah, go ahead and lower the boom there.
Okay, so we had Jackson Public, who creates this this super cool cartoon called Adventure Brothers that you may be familiar with.
He was one of the head writers on The Tick.
Yes, and he was brought along by our buddy John Hodgman.
We can say our buddy.
Yeah, we can now.
I feel like he's our friend.
Yeah, he is. He is. You can feel that way.
Right.
And I'm really glad that John brought Jackson along because he actually saved our butts like several times
trivia.
With questions. Yeah. We would have, there would have been like 5-6 questions that we wouldn't have gotten had it not been for him.
And he was a very cool guy.
Wyatt Cenac from The Daily Show came along. Another buddy.
Super cool. We actually had lunch with Ian Hodgman one day.
Yes. The esteemed Joe Randazzo, the editor-in-chief of The Onion, who, again, we couldn't have done any of this without.
Joe was awesome.
Joe was there just looking pumped, you know, because he works out instead of smokes now. He's very intimidating. And then Ira Glass.
Yes.
Ira Glass.
The man that we stare up at in the iTunes rankings every day.
Yes.
Ira Glass was there.
On our team. Not there to berate us. No, he was there on our team.
He was very cool, and I just need to say that he came up to me afterward and was blown away.
Do your impression, Chuck.
Oh, and I don't want to start impressioning Iron Gladys. Your fans are amazing.
That was pretty good. That was close.
He was blown away by the enthusiasm of the Stuff You Should Know Army.
Yeah.
And he doesn't, and Randazzo came up too, and he's like, man, Ira doesn't get this sort of like rock star thing much. So he was tickled to be there, I think.
Yeah.
And have people, you know, fawning over him and telling him how much they loved him, which is something he deserves.
Yep.
And Hodgman, we mentioned John Hodgman was on our team.
Yeah.
And he was one of the funniest, quickest, witted, smartest guys I've ever met in my life.
Agreed. I'm with you 100% on that one.
Like, I told my buddy Scotty about that, and he said, you're really quick, though, man. I said, yeah, but when I quickly make, like, a fart joke, Hodgman right. is that quick, but he references, like, an 18th century poet.
Right.
And it fits, and it's funny.
Right. It's like a drag racer,
yeah,
and like a 15-year-old donkey in competition in that one.
Thank you.
Yeah, same here, buddy. Yeah. I've got like the 12-year-old donkey thing going on. All right, so we had a good time. Thank you very much, everybody who helped that, and it was such a success, and we had such a good time that we're like, why would we spend any more time at the office? Let's go hit other cities. So look for other cities in the very near future, and we want to know where we should go next. So if you have a suggestion of what city, where we should go, that kind of thing, you want to play us in trivia, let us know. Send us an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called How Ghost Prisons Work, originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on June 22nd, 2010. If you'd like to contact Josh or Chuck, you can email them at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at howstuffworks.com, as well as on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and online at WFMU.org.
at times I may seem all alone. I don't want nobody to bother me. A world of my own.